DC sports fans start their day with 106.7 The Fan's Sports Junkies.
Let Jaden cook.
With Commanders Talk.
They were 60 minutes away from the Super Bowl last year, and they're better this year.
And a lot of fun.
You're acting like I haven't been embarrassed in my life before. Right.
Every morning from 6 to 10.
I thought I handled myself with incredible maturity.
If you missed it live, listen to 106.7 The Fan's Sports Junkies on Apple Podcasts, Spotify.
They're listening to everything you do.
Or wherever you get your podcasts.
Alrighty, hour number two of our radio program. It is the Zach Gelb Show on the Infinity Sports Network. We do have closure in the Dak Tua, according to Adam Schefter, Schefty at the ESPN. The NFL is fining Eagles defensive tackle Jalen Carter $57,000 for spitting on Dak Prescott. The league also says the game he was ejected for will serve as a one-game suspension. After talking to the Eagles, the NFL, and the NFLPA, Jalen has decided not to appeal and focus on the Chiefs game, said Carter's agent, Drew Rosenhaus. If they would have suspended him, I would have had no problem. Now, we do get Eagles and Chiefs this weekend. Did that play a factor into this? I'm not going to sit here and tell you that it didn't. But with that being said, what Jalen Carter did was disgusting. And did you see? He started a trend. The Florida kid this week, no one talked about that. There's a kid on Florida. Jalen Carter was the biggest story, right? From that game the next day. Oh, I know we talked Eagles and Cowboys, but it was really, did you see Jalen Carter spit on Dak Prescott? And then Dak, we saw, had a little friendly fire when Jalen was kind of talking some smack and trying to get in their heads. And I think Dak just issued a warning shot. That was kind of him marking his own territory. And then Jalen fired back with spit right in the face of one Dak Prescott. There's a kid in Florida got ejected this weekend towards the end of the game who hocked a huge loogie right on a USF player. No one really mentioned, everyone just mentioned, oh, USF beat Florida. And that USC reporter didn't even know that probably the game happened, you know, according to her AP top 25 poll. But there was a kid on Florida this weekend. When I was watching that game, he spat on a kid on a USF, an offensive lineman. But Jalen Carter not getting suspended. They're going to say the game that he missed in week one where he was kicked out of the game before the first play from the line of scrimmage, that's going to serve as the one game that he was going to miss, and he just got fined $57,000. So we could close that book there. I know some people are going to sit there and say, oh, well, why wasn't Dak Prescott suspended? Or why wasn't Dak Prescott at least fined? And I think the easy answer there is, and I thought there was a chance Dak could get fined, that his spit did not hit Jalen Carter, right? Jalen Carter intentionally spat on the quarterback of the Dallas Cowboys. So we could close the book on that whole chapter. Jalen Carter's got to grow up, though. And Jalen Carter, he could be one of the best defensive players in the NFL. We saw signs of it last year. He can't have that immaturity be shown in the field like that because they are really counting on him this year in Philadelphia. It is a Tuesday. We will have Sean Merriman joining us at 4:20 p.m. Eastern time. Ben Lieber is going to be joining us at 5 p.m. Eastern time. He was on the sidelines last night for the Vikings' epic come-from-behind victory up against the Chicago Bears. The Bears. But it is a Tuesday, so we do overreaction, proper reaction. Stu, take it away.
Another football week is complete, which means it's another week to freak out about your favorite team.
Help!
Which takes are truly crazy.
But sometimes a game can be so bad, it's almost good. You know what I'm saying?
No.
And which are so crazy, they might be right.
He's 6'5", he's 245 pounds. He's probably a Popeye's biscuit away from being a tight end.
Zach lets you know in this week's edition of Overreaction or Proper Reaction.
I feel like to pay homage to one Booger McFarlane, we need to get a Popeye's biscuit one day for this segment. And I'll eat a Popeye's biscuit during this segment. Have Samter chowing down on a Popeye's biscuit. Stu enjoying one. And I'll even try one as well. Never had a Popeye's biscuit.
They're good. I like them.
No, do you?
Yeah.
You're a big Popeye's guy?
Yeah, big enough. But yeah, I think they're very good. They're more like well done than other fast food chicken establishments, let's say.
I'm not a big fast food guy. If I had to pick fast food, I would say Chick-fil-A. And I usually make one trip a year to Chick-fil-A, and that's when I get ready to go to Marash's house for the opening weekend of college football. I get a big Chick-fil-A tray. I am in Vegas. I guess we're going to have to go to In-N-Out, because if not, Samter's going to be crying. So I'm sure that we will find a way to go right to In-N-Out. You know what I had this weekend, though? And I didn't order it, but somebody else did. And it was after having a lot of drinks this weekend as I was at that emo party that I told you about. I had a few chicken nuggets from McDonald's this weekend. I can't even remember the last time I went to McDonald's.
Now, there's chicken nuggets, and then there's chicken McNuggets. You had McNuggets.
What's the difference?
It's McDonald's. If you had chicken nuggets at McDonald's, you had chicken McNuggets.
Oh, okay.
It's a very big difference. You can't make that mistake.
And it did come with a kid's toy. I got it for your daughter, by the way.
What was it?
I'll tell you at a later date. There was no kid's toy. That's actually,
but I would be surprised if you got a Happy Meal.
I'm a grown man. I'm 31.
I'm a man. I'm 45.
All righty. What do we got cooking here?
All right. As if things couldn't get worse for the Dolphins after their embarrassing performance on Sunday, Tyreek Hill is in trouble again. Court documents from Hill's ex-wife allege at least 8 incidents of domestic violence, though Hill's lawyers call the allegations a shakedown. Hill has previously been accused of domestic violence at Oklahoma State and child abuse with the Chiefs, among other legal issues.
He's a horrible human being, by the way.
Overreaction or proper reaction? Considering Hill's past, the NFL and the Dolphins should suspend him indefinitely until the case is resolved.
I hate to say this. It's a he said, she said situation right now. And in a weird way, I don't think there's been a lot of social media outrage over this yet today. At least I haven't seen it. You know, I know that I've seen the reports and things like that. I don't know what is true and what is false. Let me be abundantly clear. If you know my history on this show, I do not give Tyreek Hill any benefit of the doubt. When I was doing Weekend Overnight, someone was trying to defend Tyreek Hill for the alleged child abuse, and I lost my mind. That was probably the most irate I've ever been on the air from one individual phone call. But I just don't think there's enough yet that the NFL could swoop in with the way that they've handled some other previous situations and say, okay, Tyreek Hill suspended indefinitely. So unfortunately, like if Tyreek Hill acts like a jackass on the sideline, that's a way that they could suspend him indefinitely, and that shouldn't be why. And they may then use this as a reason. But I think with what we have right now and the way that this is being talked about, I don't think that's going to happen. So considering Hill's pass in the NFL and the Dolphins should suspend him indefinitely until the case is resolved, I'm going to go overreaction there.
All right. We saw a plethora of quarterbacks make their first starts with new teams, including J.J. McCarthy, Sam Darnold,
J.J.
Geno Smith, Justin Fields, Daniel Jones, and of course, Aaron Rodgers. The future Hall of Famer and four-time NFL MVP tossed 4 touchdowns in the Steelers' comeback win over the Jets. Overreaction or proper reaction, Rodgers had the best debut with a new team in week 1.
Ooh, great question. Shout out, by the way, I know he's not a quarterback, but Emeka Ebuka. I was a big fan of his coming out of college, and he had 2 touchdowns for the Buccaneers in their victory up against the Atlanta Falcons. If you say Rodgers, I won't crush you for it, but I'm going to go with, as Zaire Franklin said it yesterday, Indiana Jones. Daniel Jones, to me, was the most impressive. So Rodgers had the best debut with the new team in week 1. I'm going to go overreaction there.
J.J. McCarthy struggled for most of the game in the win against the Bears last night, but came on in the fourth quarter. McCarthy completed just 7 passes for 56 yards and had an interception through 3 quarters, but exploded into fourth, going 6 for 8 for 87 yards, 2 touchdown passes, and another on the ground. Overreaction or proper reaction, the Vikings should be more concerned about McCarthy's awful first 3 quarters than excited by his big fourth quarter.
It was also a good night for your boy. I had Vikings laying 1.5, and then I had a parlay. Vikings laying 1.5 and a Justin Jefferson touchdown. So money, 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 money. But the question here is, the Vikings should be more concerned about McCarthy's awful first 3 quarters and excited by his big fourth quarter. This is one big fat overreaction. Now, I'm not saying JJ is going to be great and he's going to be awesome each and every week, but to be that bad early and then you turned it around, that shows me so much, and that's so damn impressive. And also, it's amazing how reactionary we are. And I know that could be the pot calling the kettle black at times. I'll put my hand up on that. But during the game, like, can you people just realize football is a 60-minute game? There have been quarterbacks that have looked like crap through the first 3 quarters, and they pull a rabbit out of the hat. You would have thought J.J. McCarthy was the worst quarterback ever through the first 3 quarters. And I get it. It was ugly. It was horrendous. It was brutal. But he's a young quarterback. And we are so quick to be in or out on a young quarterback. It takes time. But the fact he was that bad and he got off the ground, he got off from the floor and said, bleep you, Chicago, and said, look at me now. Oh, that was impressive. So when you ask me, should the Vikings be more concerned about McCarthy's awful first three quarters and excited by his big fourth quarter? No. Overreaction.
The Bears were on the other side of that loss at Soldier Field last night. Though video before the game showed a sloppy, poorly maintained field after multiple summer concerts at the venue. Before the game, however, the team sent a letter to fans officially announcing that they were leaving the oldest stadium in the NFL and moving to Arlington Heights, about 30 miles outside of Chicago. Overreaction or proper reaction, even though newer stadiums have more newer amenities, you prefer going to games at older stadiums.
I always said Shea Stadium was a dump, but it was my dump. I love going to games in Buffalo. That stadium is awesome. But let's be real. You walk into a great new stadium that is well done. Like MetLife Stadium here in the Swamps of Jersey is a waste of space. But you go to SoFi Stadium. You go to the Raiders Stadium. You go to the stadium in Atlanta or in Minnesota. Those things are unbelievable. So I do think there's something cool about going to a... Like, the new Yankee Stadium is nothing special, if I'm just being honest. Citi Field, I love Shea Stadium. Citi Field's better than Shea Stadium. But I've also been to Wrigley Field. Wrigley Field is awesome. But the question here is, even though newer stadiums have more amenities, you prefer going to games at older stadiums? Don't get me wrong. I do love myself an old stadium. But if the new stadium is done the right way, that's the big thing, the right way. Yeah, I like the new stadium better. So I'm going to say overreaction here on the question.
All right. The Chiefs lost their opener to their AFC West rival Chargers in Brazil. While it's not quite time to panic, Kansas City does host the Eagles next this coming week in a Super Bowl rematch. Then the Chiefs get the Giants before facing off against the Ravens in Week 4 and the Lions in Week 6. In contrast, all three of the other AFC West teams won their first games. Overreaction or proper reaction, the Chiefs' streak of 9 straight AFC West titles will end this year.
You know, I talked to last night briefly, Jim Harbaugh. During the J.J. McCarthy game, I sent him a text after McCarthy made the comeback, and I said, were you watching the J.J. McCarthy comeback? What a toughness and winner he was. Jim Harbaugh, immediate response. And it was very short. Bet. That's what he wrote. Bet. So how about that from Jim Harbaugh last night, all fired up for his old quarterback. That's my quarterback. That's my quarterback. So the question here is, the Chiefs streak of 9 straight AFC West titles will end this year. I like the Broncos defense. I'm a huge fan of Jim Harbaugh. Love what I saw from Justin Herbert. Still, your Raiders probably like an 8-win team too, but I'm still going with the Chiefs. So the Chiefs streak of 9 straight AFC West titles will end this year. That is an overreaction.
Now, yesterday we spoke with former Florida Gator and friend of the show, Channing Crowder, who thinks it is time for Florida head coach Billy Napier to go.
He just doesn't get that team going. You should have outclassed the USF. You have more money, you have better players, you have a better quarterback. You just, everything around you at University of Florida should have outclassed them. And to lose to them, I was embarrassed. I was embarrassed and nobody was, I was laid on my couch by myself. And I was still embarrassed that we lost to USF. I don't think his seat is hot. I think his seat is burned up and he's fallen to somewhere because you can't do that. You do not punt the ball on 4th and 1 at Florida. You're Florida. You can go get 36 inches. You're Florida. Like, the arrogance of Florida needs to be throughout the entire campus. Like, there's an arrogance at Florida. Steve Spurrier started it. There's an arrogance at Florida that I don't feel as if Billy can do it.
However, LSU head coach Brian Kelly spoke to the media ahead of their matchup against Florida this weekend and had harsh words for those calling for Napier's job.
My Tiger family.
A lot of people calling for his head down there. You don't have to comment on that, but I would welcome it.
Crazy.
But,
craziness.
But crazy? What have you learned about him as a coach and what are your impressions?
He's a really good football coach. You know, he knows his team. Oh. He knows what their strengths and weaknesses are. He's building a culture that is fit to his eye
slobber,
in terms of what
slobber,
he wants to do.
Slobber.
He's doing it his way. That's awesome. Look, I came in here, right, and Ed was here. And he won a national championship, right? But he did it his way, right? It was his way, and that's fine. I do it my way. It takes time to put in your philosophy and the way you like to do things. And it's the same thing with Billy. Billy's come in after two or three other head coaches that changed the way the other coaches did it. And now he's starting to stabilize that program. So people talk about whatever they want. It's crazy. It takes you what it takes. And he'll get that thing where he wants it. I think he's got it right now. They beat us last year.
All right.
He just lost to USF, coach. He's 20-20 as a head coach. What is this guy talking about?
Maybe he didn't know they lost to USF either.
Yeah. Maybe let me check his coaches poll.
Overreaction or proper reaction? Billy Napier will get fired before the end of the Gator season.
At LSU, at Miami, Texas, at Texas A&M, Mississippi State, Georgia, at Kentucky, at Ole Miss, Tennessee, and at Florida State. Or are playing Florida State at the end of the year? That's a dead man walking. That seat is burnt. So Napier will get fired before the end of the season. That's a proper reaction.
After 2 weeks of the season, we have a new Heisman favorite. Most sportsbooks have LSU's Garrett Nussmeier as the leader right now, followed closely by Oklahoma's John Mateer, then Oregon's Dante Moore, and shocker, Miami's Carson Beck. Overreaction or proper reaction, one of these four quarterbacks will win the Heisman.
I think it's too early to tell. I still got to see how great LSU could be. It was impressive with what they did up against Clemson. Oklahoma, nice one up against Michigan, but Michigan isn't a dominant team. Oregon, let's wait until you actually play someone, but Oregon, right, they've been blowing people out. And then Carson Beck had a good start to the season, but let's see what Miami does. Like, Cam Ward was a Heisman Trophy finalist last year. They didn't make the ACC championship game. So one of these four quarterbacks will win the Heisman. I'm not ready to say that yet, so I go overreaction.
All right, last one. The Big 12 had a rough weekend with number 12 Arizona State losing a heartbreaker at Mississippi State, while Iowa State barely snuck by rivals Iowa 16-13. Kansas State and Avery Johnson lost its second game of the season, falling to Army, and Kansas fell to Missouri and West Virginia to Ohio. Overreaction or prop reaction, none of the Big 12 teams will make it past the first round of the college football playoffs.
I think Iowa State is a problem now. I do. They beat Iowa. I know it was sloppy. I know it's a gritty game. I think that kid Rocco Becht is a baller. And Matt Campbell is starting to restore himself as a head football coach. If that team is in the college football playoff, I wouldn't want to play them in the opening round. So that's what I'm going to hitch my wagon to. So when you ask me none of the Big 12 teams will make it past the first round of the college football playoff, I'm going overreaction. Sean Merriman will join us next. It is the Zach Gelb Show.
DC sports fans start their day with 106.7 The Fan's Sports Junkies.
Let Jaden cook.
With Commanders Talk.
They were 60 minutes away from the Super Bowl last year, and they're better this year.
And a lot of fun.
You're acting like I haven't been embarrassed in my life before. Right.
Every morning from 6 to 10.
I thought I handled myself with incredible maturity.
If you missed it live, listen to 106.7 The Fan's Sports Junkies on Apple Podcasts, Spotify.
They're listening to everything you do.
Or wherever you get your podcasts.
Football is back. Lights Out Extreme Fighting also back on September 20th. They have a great card upcoming. And Sean Merriman, who obviously runs that and is a former NFL linebacker, is kind enough to join us right now once again on the Zach Gelb Show. Sean, always great to see you. Thanks so much for the time. How you been?
What's up, Zach? How you doing, my man?
Well, I'm doing fantastic. I got to start you off with your Chargers. Man, Justin Herbert looked good.
Yeah, man. And you know what? I wasn't really surprised. And I've been talking about it all offseason. I think that a lot of people, when I say things, I'm going to come across as biased. But yeah, if you just look at the history, man, of not just that team and where they were last year. I mean, Jim Harbaugh took that same Brandon Staley team to the playoffs. I mean, they won five games the year before. And so if you look at Jim Harbaugh's history and what he's done over the last, you know, every organization, every program he's been to, that year 2-5, and it's year 2-4 is when he started cranking in all cylinders. So it's about right. I mean, it's about right for these guys to not just turn up the heat, but possibly come out on top in the division and be a real contender coming out in the AFC. I mean, I wasn't surprised at the game at all.
What do you make of Kansas City? Is that just all right, opening game, right? They're a champion. They'll figure it out, or there's some real concerns with that football team now?
I think that people overlook the fact that, for one, you got Patrick Mahomes. They're always going to be in the running for something, right? They're not going out there and going to lay an egg. That's never going to happen. But what people forget is when the team's been so dominant in the division for so long, at some point, that division just gets better. It's not about them getting worse. That division just gotten better. The Raiders got better. They're a better team than they were last year. The Broncos are a better team than they were last year. The Chargers are definitely a better team than they were last year. As you can see, they're very, very balanced. I said this for this past year. They're the most physical team in football. The Chargers are, and their style of play. And so it's not necessarily that the Chiefs got worse. It's just the rest of that team, the division got better.
How far are you willing to go on Herbert? I think he's a really good quarterback. Obviously, he has to have more success in the postseason. Sorry enough, the season with that is good, and it gets some people off his back. But, you know, that could creep right back up once again. Your view of Justin Herbert as a quarterback is what so far?
Well, everybody forgets that Justin Herbert has not had a stable situation since he got there. From the head coach all the way down to the offensive coordinator, all the way down to the quarterback coach. He hasn't had a stable situation in a long time. So, you know, it's different for a defensive player. I can learn the playbook in a week. Because you go out there and you just go and play football, and the lingo is pretty much the same thing as it has been. When you're a quarterback, that's like learning a different language. Every single year, you got to turn over. And so if you're not comfortable, you can't go out there and play football, you're not going to make all the best decisions. And now, for the first time since he's been there, they're not relying on him to go out and win every single football game. They got a balanced running attack. They got a huge offensive line. I know Slater going down it hurt them, you know, of him not being there. But if you look everywhere else in that offense, they are massive. They are physical. They love to run the football. And by the way, we got a quarterback, you know, Chargers got a quarterback who has the biggest arm in the NFL. If he needs to do that, but he's not asked to do that anymore. And that's where they're really going to excel at, because Justin Herbert doesn't have to go out and single-handedly win football games for them anymore.
Sean Merriman here with us. We go from one of your former teams to the other, the Buffalo Bills, man. I said this the other day. I still think Mahomes is the best quarterback, the most feared quarterback in the NFL, but Josh Allen, he's the best playmaker in the NFL. And what he did down 15 with 4 or 5 minutes to go is a 99.1% win percentage for the Ravens. To be able to pull that rabbit out of the hat, and also he doesn't have like a great number one weapon around him, man, he's unbelievable.
You know, I think, you know, over the last few years, Josh Allen's biggest knock on him was he throws interceptions, right? He'll go out and make a lot of big plays. He'll look great, but he throws costly interceptions. When he's not doing that, I think he's neck and neck with Patrick Mahomes. I think that as this season progresses, if he keeps playing the way he's playing, there people are going to start looking at him as the number one quarterback because his decision-making got a lot better. They ran the ball when they needed to. He made the plays when they needed to. And also, you know, and I don't want to knock the Ravens too much because they played a really good football team, but Josh Allen will take advantage of any defense that can't go out there and stand up against him. And he's shown that. People are already walking out the stadium. They thought that thing was done. And he saw an opening, and they got a little bit of light at the end of the tunnel, and he took advantage. And he's going to continue to do that the whole entire season as long as he's put in that situation.
I think people could debate the order, but I think it's clear. In whatever order you want, the four best quarterbacks of the NFL these days, Mahomes, Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, and Joe Burrow. You being a former linebacker, you being a former really good defensive player in this league, who would be the one that would keep you up at night the longest in preparation for him?
It's Lamar. It's Lamar because, and I just finished talking to Cam Jordan just now, and I did a sack summit with Von Miller Cam Jordan, and Max Crosby this offseason. We just talked straight up pass rush, and I asked them the same thing, right, because it's a different time than back when I played. It's a different ball game when you got to face Lamar because not only is he mobile, if you run any kind of man-to-man coverage, you go down the field, and you're not that's a 20-plus yard gain automatically. It's a 20-plus yard gain and more, depending on what he does with the football. And by the way, if you find a way to box him in, he can also throw. And so that is the scariest thing to deal with when you're facing a quarterback. Now, don't get me wrong. Mahomes can scorch you if you let him, right? You want to run man-to-man coverage, and he's going to fake the ball down the field and take off and pick up a first down. Lamar Jackson can win a game with his legs. That is a completely different situation when you're going out facing a quarterback like him.
Wrap it up with Sean Merriman. We'll talk about Lights Out Extreme Fighting in just a bit. How about what J.J. McCarthy did last night? Three quarters, it was terrible. And then the fourth quarter, he just showed you why that guy's a winner.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny. Only the Vikings organization know that, because the year that Sam Darnold had, I know he didn't play that well, you know, down the stretch, but the year he had, for them to make that decision, because remember, there was some talks about J.J. McCarthy being traded out of there or whatever. You know, there was some talks about moving him instead of Sam Darnold. The Vikings organization saw something. They knew something that nobody else knew. And that fourth quarter proves exactly what they knew that the rest of the world out here didn't, that they made the right choice in a guy that can have, you know, basically stink it up for three quarters and turn it on when he needs to in order to win the game.
Now, on the flip side, Ben Johnson talked a lot of smack this offseason, right? 2 years ago, didn't have any interest in taking the Commanders job when a lot of us thought he was going to go there. Takes the job in Chicago, says, oh, I love beating Matt LaFleur twice a year. Basically looks at the tush-push and goes, it's not an explosive play. It's not my cup of tea. And last night, he blows a double-digit lead. His quarterback got worse as the game did go on, and he's an offensive genius, right, as a former great offensive coordinator. Didn't manage the clock correctly with the timeouts. And then also, the end of the game, I know you tell you kick it to kick it out of the end zone, but they ultimately didn't get it right, and that ball got ran out, and then it was in front of the, or, you know, past the two-minute warning. What you saw from Ben Johnson and then Caleb Williams, I know it's only one game, but how concerning is it?
It's not concerning, because you're talking about going from a coordinator to a head coach. It is a different ball game. When you're a head coach, and I talked to Wade Phillips about this one time, when you're a head coach, you become a manager of everybody, right? You're a manager of the offensive coordinator, defense coordinator. You're a manager of special teams. You're a manager. You're not necessarily put in a situation where you got to make decisions on the spot. You're not sitting there calling the plays, and you have one singular focus to go out there and move the offense down the field. You're managing timeouts. You're managing game management. Do we punt here on third and two or fourth and two? You're managing all these personalities in this organization in order to make the best decision. And so I'm not surprised that he had some hiccups when he could have made some better, you know, some better calling or made better decisions, because he's never done it before. That doesn't take away from his offensive mind and his offensive capabilities. But the thing is, he's not calling the offense by itself no more. You know, he may have an input and when they're game planning, but as a head coach, you're not now that could change. If it gets bad for them down the road, then maybe he takes on that role a little bit more. But as of right now, you're a manager, not a game, you're a manager of everybody in that organization and on that field, from all the coordinators all the way down to the players. And that is where he's going to have to learn, have a fast learning curve at.
Let me ask you this on the quarterback in Caleb Williams. Justin Fields, a lot of people spoke out and wanted him a few years ago. They ultimately take Caleb Williams. Fields has now been out of that building for 2 years. Fields played really well. I know it's only one game, but he played really well up against the Steelers. And Caleb Williams has been told, right, he's a generational talent. He's going to be all that. There's been a lot of questions about him leading into year number two. In that locker room, do you think those players start to seriously question and doubt the abilities of Caleb Williams, who just hasn't so far in his career showed he could be all that?
Well, I think, first of all, I think that Caleb Williams is one of the most scrutinized quarterbacks like in football. It almost seems like that dude can't do nothing right. And as soon as he makes one mistake, everybody just jumps on him. He's still young. He's still got a bunch of growing to do. He's still got a bunch of figuring it out. Everybody loves to jump on him anytime they get a chance. But his talent was never the question coming out in the draft. We all knew what he could do talent-wise. It was always a knock against his leadership and can he lead a team. And that is where we all going to find out as the season goes, because if it goes bad, he's not the one to step up, then everybody was right. I don't think I've heard anybody questioning his talent and what he can do on the field. It was always against his leadership. And when things go bad, is he the one to get everybody together? Can he lead the charge if things start to hit the fan? And so that is what we're going to find out. But talent-wise, they made the right choice if they were going off of talent. It's can he lead the team? And that's what we're going to find out.
If you were in that locker room right? And you said you think some of the criticism, right, is a little bit unfair and he gets scrutinized so much. Let's say you're a veteran in that locker room. What would you say to him after a game like that today?
Yeah, it's just, you know, you got to go through the rough patches with him. You're going to have to, especially if he's going to be the guy long term. If guys start jumping off the ship this early, their whole season is going to go down the drain, period, because they're going to live and die by him. And that's why I went back to his leadership skills. If he can't lead that team into, you know, a good season, because they're going to hit a rough patch and guys start jumping off the ship in the middle of the season, it's going to be rocky for him the rest of his career. I don't take him, and I don't know him. I know he's from Washington, D.C., and, and I got some family and friends and know his dad. I don't take him for a person that can flip the script and just turn into a leader all of a sudden. I don't see that. I don't see that out of him. Talent-wise, I think he's still one of the most talented quarterbacks in the NFL and what he can do, what he's capable of. But if guys start to jump off ship because they don't believe in his leadership, I don't see him turning around and all of a sudden be this guy that he had a knock on coming out during the draft.
What do you got cooking with Lights Out Extreme Fighting, Sean?
Yeah, we got a huge fight coming up September 20th in Long Beach, California. You know, if you're in SoCal, you don't want to miss this one. Get your tickets at lightsoutxf.com. But also make sure you download Lights Out Sports TV. A lot of free sports there. But we got a couple guys. Tyrell Fortune, I'm looking to see him back on his card as well. He's number one heavyweight right now, pound for pound. Jake Babian's on his card as well. Renato, who fought over at Bellator as well. So we got about, I think, three or four guys on this card alone. They got a real shot at possibly going to the UFC one day. And when they offer that check, I got to let them go because I can't afford it. So I'll let Dana and them take that off their hands. But, yeah, September 20th, Long Beach, California, doors open at 4:30. But we got a massive card lined up.
Well, Netflix and the UFC, they have us going out to Vegas this week for that boxing match between Canelo and Crawford. I don't know if you dabble into the boxing world at all, but what are your thoughts on that fight? Yeah? How do you think it's going to go down?
You know, I know both of the guys, so it's always hard for me to pick. But I can't see Canelo losing because of his style, man. I think when it gets later in around 6th, 7th round, he's going to start wearing Terrence Crawford down. Just power alone, sheer power. I think that Terrence Crawford is going to look good those first 3-4 rounds. I think he's going to get some really good shots on him, but it's not going to be enough to hurt Canelo. It's just not, because Canelo's fought bigger fighters before. He's been hit. He has been knocked down. So I don't see Terrence Crawford doing enough damage to him to wear him down, to put any real pressure on him. And then once he give him all he got that first 3 or 4 rounds, I think 6, 7, 8 rounds, that's when it's going to start getting bad for Terrence Crawford, because he won't be able to sustain the kind of power that Canelo has.
He's Sean Merriman, Lights Out Extreme Fighting. Sean, appreciate the time as always. Thank you, my friend.
You got it, man. Thanks for having me.
There you go. Sean Merriman joining us right there on the Zach Gelb Show on the Infinity Sports Network. We'll take a timeout when we come on back. It's already clear that Nico Iamaliava made the wrong decision, but Joey Aguilar does have something to prove this weekend. Take a break. We'll discuss that on the other side. Update time first. Here's Zach. All right. It is the Zach Gelb Show on the Infinity Sports Network. You know, I'm looking at college football right now, and there's already one guy. I don't think his pride will let him say it, but if he's just being transparent, and if he's someone that, if he's sitting by himself or maybe with the family member, well, maybe not with the family member because the family member didn't handle this the right way, but if he's just being honest, doesn't Nico Iamaliava already have to regret transferring to UCLA? Because he kind of thought he was going to be a hotter commodity. Remember, there was a time we thought he was going to go to Notre Dame. Right, that Notre Dame could have been a possibility. But when he left Tennessee, you can't tell me that he thought he was going to wind up at UCLA and be happy with it. So I look at Nico Iamaliava and UCLA. They're 0-2 to start the season. They lose to Utah. They got smacked. It wasn't even competitive. And everyone's talking about Dampier, the Utah quarterback, over Iamaliava. And then you look at UNLV. UNLV, their first game of the season, I know UNLV has played 3 games so far, but UNLV wasn't all that impressive against Idaho State. Remember Dan Mullen, we played you the audio after the game, where Dan Mullen was saying, oh, I'm always going to celebrate a victory, and I'm not going to apologize for that. And then they beat Sam Houston State. So the first test for UNLV this season was really UCLA, and they beat UCLA this weekend 30-23. So if I'm Nico Iamaliava, I got to be sitting there saying, what the heck did I get myself into? Like, what JV program did I get myself into? And that's what UCLA is right now. I have nothing against Ashawn Foster, right? He had that terrible press conference at Big Ten Media Days 2 years ago. Came back this year. It was actually funny. But the crap that this guy's pulling before the start of the season, I can't talk to players. You know, we're going to limit media access. You're UCLA. You know, I understand you guys have some tradition in terms of the name of the school and all that, but you're UCLA. You're not Alabama. You're not Georgia. You're not Ohio State. You're not Penn State. Right? We get Alabama players and coaches on whenever we want. We get Georgia players and coaches on. We get Oregon players and coaches on. Do you think those big programs need the publicity? No. But it's a game. So UCLA, you're trying to sell your program. Isn't that funny? The coach at UCLA 2 years ago thought he had to introduce his team to the nation. Now he's afraid of the coverage. What? 2 years ago, you think you had to tell everyone where UCLA is located, and you basically had to describe who your program is because you thought no one's ever heard of them. And now you don't want media coverage? So UCLA is a disaster this year. And it's one thing to be bad. It's another thing to be embarrassing. But the best thing that Deshaun Foster has going for him right now is that Nico Iamaliava is going to be his quarterback. Because in the national discourse, what are people going to talk about? You know, people like me know what Deshaun Foster's doing right now. But the casual college football fan or the person that really doesn't give a rat's ass about UCLA, they only care about UCLA for one reason. And that's because, oh, let's see what Nico Iamaliava does. And that's got to be one of the worst gambles ever. But we're only two games into the UCLA season. How horrendous was that gamble? You know, sometimes you make a bet. And you know very quickly, uh-oh, I'm screwed. This bet's not going to hit. That's what's going on with Nico Iamaliava right now. You left Tennessee. Tennessee is a good program under Josh Heupel. Not great, but good. You were in the college football playoff last year. And because you thought you were better than what you were, and also your dad got in your ear, you ended up at UCLA, which as a college football program is irrelevant. Irrelevant. And you're 0-2 while your former team is undefeated to start the year. And I get it. They played Syracuse and East Tennessee State. But Tennessee has a big game this weekend up against Georgia. And I'm not ready to say that Joey Aguilar won, you know, in terms of, oh, that he's going to be great. But Joey Aguilar, the first 2 weeks, looks like a better quarterback than Nico Iamaliava, and he's in a better situation. So Joey Aguilar, who jumped around, right, was at UCLA for a quick sip of coffee, and then boom, I'll go to Tennessee. Iamaliava wants to come here. Be my guest, dude. And he winds up in where Nico used to be, right in Nico's backyard. And this is a huge moment this weekend in college football. Because right now, it's clear that Nico Iamaliava lost. Joey Aguilar, it looks like he's winning. But he could really go stamp and really put his mark out there on the football field. And I get it, Iamaliava last year at Tennessee, the college football playoff. Tennessee has to still get back to the college football playoff. But you go beat Georgia now as a sixth-ranked team in the country? My, oh my, that would really be something. It would just further add salt into the wound that is Nico Iamaliava. But man, imagine when Nico Iamaliava last year had Tennessee in a playoff, and right, there were moments last year where even though Iamaliava had a good start and he wasn't great throughout the entirety of the season, you go, the kid's a freshman, right? Kid's playing great. Kid's playing good enough. Where I remember, I have a tweet somewhere, I got to go find it, where we're talking about the future of some of these younger quarterbacks at college football, you know, Arch Manning, Dylan Raiola, right? The Nebraska quarterback. Nico Iamaliava, those are three quarterbacks, even though Arch wasn't playing last year, you know, earlier on, those three quarterbacks are going to be talked about a lot. Like, wait until that draft class. Wait until those guys are draft eligible. And Dylan Raiola, right, Nebraska, we'll see what they do in a few weeks up against Michigan. But he's thought to be a good quarterback. Arch Manning, I know game one didn't go his way, but I'm not ready to count Arch out yet. Where's the hope for Iamaliava? You're at UCLA, dude. And you're already 0-2. You lost to Utah and UNLV. So you play New Mexico at Northwestern, then you get Penn State, you're at Michigan State, you play Maryland, you're at Indiana, you play Nebraska, you're at Ohio State, Washington, USC. You'll be lucky to even get to a bowl game. Now, I know they were 5-7 last year, but think about this. Nico Iamaliava goes from being on a college football, I don't want to call him a national championship contender. They were a college football playoff team last year. That's what Tennessee is. They could be a college football playoff team again this year because they have a good coach in Josh Heupel. They have good structure with their AD and Danny White. But you leave Tennessee and you end up at UCLA and you thought that was the best thing for your football career? You know, still got your money, even though I think you were making more at Tennessee last year than what you're making now at UCLA, if memory serves me right. But you got to be sitting back there and saying, what the hell heck did I get myself into? If I was Nico Iamaliava right now, I'd be jealous of Joey Aguilar. I'd be sitting there and saying, wow, that guy gets to go play Georgia this weekend. That guy has a hope this season. You know, he could have a dream this season. After 2 weeks, what do I have? I got blown out by Utah, and I just lost to Dan Mullen and UNLV. And I'm sitting here as the quarterback of UCLA while Joey Aguilar is my teammates and he's playing well. And man, I hate to say it this way, but if Joey Aguilar beats Georgia this weekend and pulls off the upset, Nico Iamaliava, you're getting everything that you deserve. Because there's no reason why you shouldn't be the quarterback at Tennessee. If you're going to tell me you ended up going to Notre Dame, all right, you upgraded. Notre Dame was a national championship game last year. You went to a 5-win football team where the coach doesn't want anyone talking to the media. And they're 0-2. Ay, ay, ay. This portion of the show is brought to you by Wesley Financial. Stuck in a timeshare and want out? Contact Wesley Financial Group now and get a free timeshare exit information kit at wesleyfinancialgroup.com. The biggest story of the day. How about what J.J. McCarthy and Kevin O'Connell did last night in the Windy City? And then the other side, ay, 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 Ben Johnson. Whew. Humble pie, real quick. Caleb Williams. Are you that much different than last year? We will talk to a man that was on the sidelines last night at Soldier Field. He, of course, is Ben Lieber. Does a great job. Former Vikings linebacker. And he's involved with the Vikings radio network. He's going to join us on the show when the Zach Gelb Show continues in 5 minutes.
DC sports fans start their day with 106.7 The Fan's Sports Junkies.
Let Jaden cook.
With Commanders Talk.
They were 60 minutes away from the Super Bowl last year, and they're better this year.
And a lot of fun.
You're acting like I haven't been embarrassed in my life before. Right.
Every morning from 6 to 10.
I thought I handled myself with incredible maturity.
If you missed it live, listen to 106.7 The Fan's Sports Junkies on Apple Podcasts, Spotify.
They're listening to everything you do.
Or wherever you get your podcasts.